It's 2:52 a.m. at the Renaissance Pleasure Fair in Irwindale, California, and you're listening to Night Call. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Night Call, a podcast for your medieval days and Renaissance nights. I'm Molly Lambert. And here in Los Angeles with me is
Tess Lynch. And over in New York City, we have
Emily Yoshida.
And please give us a call at 1-240-46-NIGHT or shoot us an email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. Check out our socials on Instagram and Twitter at nightcallpod, no cast.
I'm trying to do a better job with our socials.
Me too.
Trying to keep them hot.
Stepping up the socials.
Yeah, without giving away which ones we run, we're all trying to.
There's also a Facebook, by the way, not that I run it, but if I did, then you would be able to find it at Facebook.com/Night Call Podcast.
It's there. But also, you know, leave Facebook. That's fine with us.
That's true. It is fine. I can't leave Facebook, not that I'm running a social media page for a podcast, but I for other reasons, can't.
Guys,
I wouldn't want you to hypothetically be stuck on Facebook so that you could hypothetically run the socials for Night Call.
Right? What a miserable situation.
Guys, speaking of being trapped in previous eras.
Yeah, tell us.
I went to the Renaissance Fair again.
How many times have you been?
This is my second time. I went for the
first... Oh, it's only your second time?
Yeah, I went for the first time last year. Kind of for my other podcast, North Mollywood, because friend of our podcast, Dane Marie, is a big Ren Faire person, and I hate medieval stuff, and she had convinced me that the Ren Faire would be my point of entry into understanding why people like medieval stuff, and she was right.
Let me guess what she said. She was like, there's goats. And you were like, okay, no, I saw a bunch of pictures of you with goats, and I was like, that's the draw.
I didn't know there were goats the first time, and I was so delighted and surprised that there's a petting zoo, a very awesome petting zoo. I think it was more like there's fried food and you can like stare at people. And I was like, in.
It's so hard to find that combination in America, fried food and staring at people.
Well, you know, Molly,
you would love the Folsom Street Fair.
Oh, yeah. I've always wanted to go to the Folsom Street Fair. I like things like that. As you all know, Emily and I went to Times Square a couple weeks ago and I was just walking around, just was so goofy and happy.
I feel like the Ren Faire this year was so star-studded. I knew so many people who were posting about it on their Instagram. Like I saw that you were there with Andrew T.
Yeah,
and
I was
Cara
there
Brown,
in a group
right?
with Cara Brown and Andrew T. And
reluctantly.
I love the... I didn't love it, but it like occurred to me. I haven't been to one of these forever, not since I was a kid, but Andrew was like, if one person tells me like, oh, a visitor from the East.
You know, he said that, but then... you know, part of my argument for why the California Ren Faire is cool is it's way more diverse than you might expect from a Ren Faire. You know, it's kind of just like a California thing. So there's like people dressed up in Ren Faire stuff, but then there's also just people wearing like flip-flops and t-shirts, and it's like pretty casual.
What did you wear?
So Andrew he said, you know, like at the end of the day, like he said there were like way more Asian Americans there than he expected.
Did he have fun?
Sure.
But he did not have fun.
What did you wear? Did you dress up?
He was not feeling it. I wore like a regular outfit. I was kind of cold actually, which was great because the first time I went, it was 110 degrees and was like a little hellish.
Yeah.
So this was like delightfully more English feeling because it was cold.
Well, I mean, as much as I'm like, oh God, you know, I cringe at the thought of Ren Faires because my mom would take me to them when I was a kid.
Wait, did you put on like a little Elizabethan outfit?
I don't even remember what I wore. Rough. I was mostly mortified to be there, but now thinking back and imagining going to another one, it kind of bums me out to imagine a Ren Faire where like people are wearing flip flops. Like if you're
cool.
gonna do a bit, commit to it.
No, they're like, playing like it's very just SoCal. There's like a K-Rock booth at the front that was playing pop punk as you enter. you know, there's a lot of like Raiders
ye olde
gear.
Blink 182.
Yeah, ye olde Blink 182, and just like it's always been anachronistic, and it's actually the first Renaissance Fair ever. Is this one
really?
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was a bunch of like medieval academics who would have dinners in LA and do like cosplay and be like, let's have a knights and ladies dinner. And then they were like, wouldn't it be fun if everyone could join? And they started throwing it and they invented like the template of the Ren Fair, which also Andrew was like, oh, it's just like a carnival that's like medieval themed.
Right. Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. You can buy crafts and stuff.
Yeah. It's
like, rides? You can watch somebody like do blacksmithery.
Yeah. There are rides.
Is there jousting?
There's jousting. Yeah.
Okay.
There's rides and the rides are really low tech, which is kind of cool. We were there with Jane's kid, who's really cool. And she was just like super stoked for these rides that are like, they put you on like a dragon Viking boat and just kind of push you back and forth, you know? But like for little kids, they're like, this is amazing. And there's one really anachronistic, great ride that's just a giant wading pool full of those bubbles you can go inside.
Wait, excuse me? Like a hamster ball type
bubble? Like a hamster ball for kids that like maybe only kids can fit in. And there's just like a giant wading pool full of them with kids, just like bubble ball.
That sounds so dangerous.
But you know, it's actually based on a medieval sport, the hamster bubble ball, where the fittest children survived and they moved on to the next round.
I like everyone's enthusiasm their for it. Yes. I mean, it was really fun to go. You know, I'm just like enchanted by everything. And Andrew and Kara were definitely way more skeptical. Kara was kind of like, you know, like, I don't really want to live in any other time. I don't really.
Maybe the
that's
future
my
only.
Feeling about everything.
Well, then
now,
I was trying. Yeah. And then I was like, well, what is your ideal fair? You know, like what would be a theme you would be into? And we were kind of talking about that. I feel like we'd never really reached a conclusion.
Of your era.
Or just like what, you know, besides, because I was like, there should be more fairs, like not just Renaissance.
You go to an Egypt fair.
Well, that's what I said. I was like, really, I'd like ancient Egypt land. That's the West world that I would most enjoy. And I think part of it is also like you go into the past to be like, thank God I don't live in the past. Spring into better sleep with Lisa mattresses and use our discount code $125 off at lisa.com/nightcall. The deepest discount we've ever offered on a Lisa mattress. I got my Lisa recently and I love it. It is very squishy and I've honestly never slept better. And I would recommend them to everybody. For every 10 sold, Lisa donates one mattress and plants one tree for every order received. So far, they've donated 23,000 mattresses. So every time you get a mattress, somebody else gets a mattress. It's wonderful. They have 11,000 five-star reviews and is loved by 300,000 happy sleepers and counting. Socially conscious with a mission to end bedlessness in America, Lisa Mattress was designed to provide support and pressure relief to every body type and every type of sleeper for a deeper night's sleep. So go ahead and order your Lisa Mattress and get $125 off at lisa.com/nightcall, the deepest discount we've ever offered and the deepest sleep you will ever have.
I mean, the fairs I like, honestly, now thinking back on it, is like a good state fair I love.
I've never been to the state fair.
Really?
A fair-themed fair.
I used to go to the Goshen Fair in, I think Goshen, I don't know if it's even New York or Connecticut, because it's where everything meets, that part of New England where you're like, where am I? In New England, Goshen Fair, and it was a lot of like, drink the milk from the cow and like, guess how much the pig weighs.
Oh yeah, I'd probably enjoy that even more.
It was super
fun. That stuff is great.
Yeah.
I mean, when we got to the Renaissance Fair, somebody was holding like a cut off pig's head and we were all a little bit like, I don't know about that. I don't really want that at this.
Well, see, I grew up in Iowa where like the state fair in Iowa was like the musical state fair is based on that state fair. Like it was
like
the mother of all state fairs for a long time.
I would love to go to the Iowa state fair. Is that like where they make sculptures out of butter and stuff like that?
It is. That is the home of the butter cow and many other butter things. And I mean, after I kind of got a little too old to just go for rides, I would just love going to all the craft halls and seeing everybody's like incredible quilts and stuff like I got really into quilts every time I would go to the fairs because I was like, look at how much time people spent on this. And it's like so heartwarming to see like all these moms across our little state, like, you know, went and baked all these fancy pies or made a fancy quilt or something. It's very sweet. I like that.
Well, it's also like a little feminist because it's like, look at all these art forms that never get valued, like folk art and baking, home baking.
Hard to
and
make
you
a
can
quilt.
Come up on stage and like get a ribbon or a trophy or whatever for like baking and for like sewing and stuff like
Let's
that.
Let's make
it's
a night
great.
Quilt.
We should make a night called Night Quilt. The pie eating contest, we had at our high school, there was like some like throwback county fair type events at
it just makes homecoming. Me think of Stand By Me.
Oh, yeah, that too.
No pie eating contest will not make me think of all the throwing up part.
Well, that's what they're reenaction of that happened at our high school pie eating contest.
At all.
Well, I'm not going to make you, okay. But we'll just say it was exactly the same.
Oh, it sounds horrible.
I was like, that's a state fair and fair in general thing I will never be able to enjoy again.
I mean, the Ren Fair is fun. You guys should go. I drink a breakfast beer, which I don't think I've ever done in my
What's
life.
A breakfast
what is that?
This one, I don't know. That's what someone kept calling it.
Are you sure it wasn't just because you were drinking a beer in the morning?
Yeah, and I was just drinking a beer at 11 in the morning.
It wasn't like a coffee-flavored stout.
No. Andrew ordered a Guinness, and he was like, I'd like to try one of these Irish beers. I've been in the colonies. Fetch me one of those. Also, the people working the beer booth are so drunk.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
You'd have to be.
It's a little, you know, I mean, it ends at 7, too. I could see where it would get a little sloppy after hours, but it's fine. It's fun for a little bit.
Is it going on? So by the time you hear this podcast, it will be over.
No, I think it goes into the month. I think it goes through May. Everybody check it out.
Nice.
It's a big fun thing to do for a little bit.
Shout out to Irwindale. Big fun thing to do for a little
bit. Well, also like the place where it is like this big fake lake that is really cool. That just kind of reminds me of Zodiac. Reminds me of the beach that they go to in
Zodiac. A treeless lake.
Yeah, it's like one of those weird California, like we got to put something in this place for people to do.
It's a ditch with some water in it.
Yeah, it's like a giant track of the park. Seems like a pretty cool place to go. Not at the Ren Fair.
Well, speaking of Zodiac and then... going off that.
Yeah, good transition.
Anytime.
Speaking of things that span California
and
are spooky.
Well, you're not going to say it. You want
me to
say it?
No, I'm going to let you say it.
Oh, okay. So they found who they think is the Golden State Killer, which is now old news, maybe. But Joseph James D'Angelo, who is 72, I think, was apprehended in Sacramento after he was tracked down using a genealogy website. They found his extended family members who had joined the site, and then they were able to find this guy. And it was interesting because it raised a lot of privacy concerns. Obviously,
totally.
So the website that they used was GED Match, which is open source and doesn't have the same privacy restrictions as Ancestry.com and 23andMe. So there, the police may have been more limited if they had used one of those sites. We don't know if they tried to use those sites and then ended up using GED Match because there were less safeguards in place. But what's interesting, like my first thought, and I really want to hear what you guys have to say about this. I was like, well, how could that really be used to like, I mean, they caught a serial rapist and serial killer. So in a way, like privacy seems like an afterthought. But then I started spinning out about the different ways that could go wrong. What do you guys think?
Well, I would love you to tell everyone what you told me before we started recording, which is that you were watching The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
Handmaids. I keep saying
I always say Handmaid's
Tale. Because it makes me think about The Handmaiden, which is also really good.
Yeah. Better. Also, you're in that Ren Fair zone, so you're like, let's just make it a maiden. I was telling Molly that, so I'm watching season 2 of The Handmaid's Tale, which is really good, but also just so scary.
I just feel like I can't submit myself to it. It's like too much.
The future, you'll be forced to.
Exactly.
Right. It's about. Right.
You'll be forced
to have a Hulu subscription.
It really shows kind of if you're unhappy with the politics in this country, which I think I am, at least. But watching the
Why?
First
What's
season,
wrong?
Why? What could be wrong? What could be wrong, Kanye?
I just made Tess listen to the new Kanye songs and I took little videos of her reactions.
Yeah, she did.
One of them, she just started facepalming really hard at a certain point.
It's just hard. I mean, I love Kanye, but I can't continue our relationship anymore at this point. I have to take a breather. It's just too much. And I love T.I., so at least that was like a nice foothold there. But I found the first season of Handmaid's Tale to be much easier to watch because I think at that point I still had a lot of optimism that by this point in time we would not still be here, but we are. So the second season's kind of intense, but I was watching it and then was reading on, I think, TechCrunch a couple days ago. They posted a thing about the Golden State Killer and the privacy concerns, and I was like, well, how could this be really catastrophic? And it takes a lot of mental gymnastics. It's not, doesn't seem at all plausible. But if you wanted to freak yourself out, you could think about if abortion were made illegal, and if the idiot that got fired from The Atlantic for saying that women who'd had abortions should be hanged, and, you know, Mike Pence got together in a little room and decided that that was going to become law, then, of course, if you'd had an abortion for any reason, you could theoretically be tracked down via your family members who were registered on an ancestry site and hanged. So I'm just saying, worst case scenario, that could be a way that privacy concerns would be valid. But I was like, I guess you also have to start thinking very carefully about how this could be used against certain groups of people, like about, well, that's, you know.
I've been very skeptical of 23andMe because, like, somebody that I follow on Twitter was talking about, like, oh, yeah, it totally could be used for eugenics. That's basically, right. Like, it's a record of people's ethnicities, you know?
It feels like if there's an analogy where, like, Facebook was laying down the infrastructure for, you know, the last presidential election or something, that I can imagine a scenario in which 23andMe and all these other sites are laying down the infrastructure for something that I don't even want to think about.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this is not like new that tech and eugenics are connected, because IBM did all the punch cards mm-hmm. for the death camps and the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to think about IBM as a company that has this like super dark history, that just any company that like does something really fucked up and then is like, let's not think about it. Because obviously a lot of companies that involve Nazis keeps coming up on Nightcall.
Yeah.
Like every time I'm at a shoe store now, I'm like a little bit like side-eyeing myself for wanting Adidas. I'm like, maybe I shouldn't buy Adidas anymore. Maybe I don't want
that. There are lots of other shoe brands. I mean, we should bring back.
Yeah.
Saucony's.
At the Ren Fair, I was like, you know, now seems like not the time to get into Celtic jewelry.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, definitely something I like have liked in the past or been like, oh, it's, you know, fine. But I'm like, nope, I don't want
Celtic jewelry, but you're a snob about medieval stuff.
Yes, I'm Irish American. Obviously, I don't trust those Brits.
Nope.
I went to the Irish Fair, which was an Irish-themed Renaissance Fair at Lake Balboa. So while I've never been to the Renaissance Fair, I totally went to a Renaissance Fair that just had like 50% more pan flute, I want to say.
Were you like, a child, you're more or was into this like recently?
Druids and stuff.
Yeah, of course I'm into druids. Into,
yeah, knights and lords and ladies.
No, I don't care about, I'm not into royalism. I'm into like, you know, paganism.
Yeah. Oh, you guys, I'm so sorry. Can you hold on? Is it okay if I go for 5 minutes?
Go ahead.
Sorry, I just had a call from school. No, I think it's totally fine. Cool. One sec.
Hey, is she gone?
I think she's gone. You know, Mother's Day's coming up. And what are you getting for Tess?
Oh, I was thinking we should get her 100 colorful blooms with a free glass vase from Pro Flowers.
I love the way you say vase. I'm right there with you. Pro Flowers is an amazing place to get flowers. Have you ever ordered from there before?
No, I'm excited. It's going to be Mother's Day. It'll be my first order.
It's so easy. It's so easy. And it'll like be great just because, you know, we want to make sure the test doesn't find out. You know, we don't have to actually like drive to the florist or anything like that.
I hope she doesn't hear this podcast before Mother's Day.
Me too. So like Molly said, right now our listeners can send 100 colorful blooms with a free glass vase or vase, either one, at just $19.99 plus shipping and handling with the promo code NIGHTCALL. And ProFlowers has everything you need to get your Mother's Day shopping done. It is the easiest way to tell your mom how much you care about her, or tell Tess how much you care about her. Send flowers to Tess.
And this is the last week that you can get the special discount code. So be sure to do it just in time for Mother's Day. And you will definitely be able to get your flower gift delivered on Mother's Day. If you would like, you can choose the delivery date.
Yeah.
There's guaranteed delivery and unique vases and accessories that mom will love. ProFlowers has everything all in one place to get your Mother's Day shopping done for all the moms you know.
Just don't be a bum and be one of those people where Monday comes around and you're like, oh man, I forgot Mother's Day, because you don't want to be that person. That's some 20-something shit. Like, get
and
your
again,
shit
we're
together.
Saying, like, it doesn't just have to be for your own mom. You can, all
any
the moms
mom
you
in
know
your life
deserve to be appreciated. So Mother's Day is this Sunday. Don't forget to show mom how much she means to you. Whatever mom means to you.
So go to proflowers.com, click on the blue microphone in the upper right corner, and use the code NIGHTCALL for 100 colorful blooms and a free glass vase. That's proflowers.com, code NIGHTCALL.
Yeah, 100 colorful blooms with a free glass vase for just $19.99, plus shipping and handling. And again, it's proflowers.com, code NIGHTCALL. Let's go get some flowers for Tess.
Okay, I think she's coming back.
I would go to a Wicker Man fest. That would be, I mean, I guess that's Burning Man.
No, that's Burning Man.
You know what, though? I would totally go to Burning Man if it weren't in the desert. The fact that it's in,
love the desert. What are you talking about?
No, not that kind. I've always said, like, I would like to go to, like, Wet Man.
Yes, yeah. Drowning Man. Drowning Man.
I feel like Ben is into that. But this is an inside joke from a different podcast. That's weird. I feel like so there's a film critic, David Ehrlich, who I'm friends with, and he recently did a I want to say it was 35 hour long marathon of all of the Marvel movies, like leading up to Avengers Infinity War that they had here at the AMC at in Times Square. And he hates the Avengers movies, and he did it like basically he did it like the way that people do runs, like where you can like raise money for a cause. So like the more people donated, the more he would like double down on it, like wear an Avengers t-shirt or something to it. Just, and he was raising money for every town, the like anti-gun violence charity. And I haven't actually checked in with him. I don't know if he survived. Actually, I think he survived. I think I have evidence of him surviving. But I think that we should do that, but for Burning Man. Like, see how long we can get Molly to stay in the desert. And every day, every successive day, more money from...
You might lose me forever.
Yeah, what did she ever do to you, Emily? Molly,
well, maybe I'm
bad,
just saying I want to go.
Yeah.
Well, here's what I was thinking, too, is like where Emily and I, and probably not Tess, would really like to go is Electric Daisy Carnival in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah.
Because it's like a Ren fair that's it's an EDM fair.
Well, now, I mean, since our last podcast, I feel like we almost can't revisit the well anymore. I almost feel like it would feel like I was just chasing a dragon indefinitely, but I don't know.
Well, you know where you can chase some dragons. I gotta say, one of the big new things at the Ren Fair was everybody had what I first thought were animatronic dragons on their shoulders.
And but they aren't?
No, it turns out they were puppets. Really good puppets that were designed designed by this guy who designed Admiral Akbar, Dobby the house elf, and some of the labyrinth creatures, and they were like totally looked like that, like all of those things.
Oh, cool.
And they were like little shoulder dragon puppets and all these.
But who's operating them if they're puppets?
Yeah, how do you control it?
You have like a little squeeze thing that you use, and these people all had it cleverly hidden inside their costume, so I thought it was an animatronic that just like moved its head back and forth, but it was actually
That's
a puppet
awesome.
That you could control. And my friend's kid got one, and she was so stoked. And she named it Go-Go the Goblin.
Oh, that's awesome.
I think just other people's enthusiasm for stuff always makes me excited. I'm like, they're having such a good time. But also Andrew was like, they're so desperate for like attention. Everybody's just like, please, sir.
Poor Andrew. It sounds like Andrew.
I know we
festival.
Got like way off topic and went back to talking about the Ren Fair again, but I actually have some questions about the Golden State Killer because I didn't really know about the Golden State
Killer.
Nobody
did until the Michelle McNamara's book came out, and they're saying that that's not why they caught him, but it obviously seems like it drummed up a lot of interest in the case.
Yeah.
It's really awful how they haven't... I mean, she got so little credit from law enforcement, which is curious because, I mean, she put so much work into it. I ordered the book, but I haven't read it yet. Everyone I know who's read it says it's incredible. Obviously, this was finished posthumously. I think she co-wrote it with a journalist.
I watched the 48-hour special, which was really good. And yeah, I mean, it is crazy. I learned a lot about... He was like a rapist in the Bay Area.
He did. It was Sacramento, and then he went north and south.
Yeah.
Right?
He ended up in Southern California, and then he murdered a bunch of people in Southern California, which is why he's called Original Night Stalker, is one of his names.
Oh, because he predates the Night Stalker.
Yeah, correct.
Wow. I think his first crime was maybe in 1978.
Oh, wow.
So... Huh. And then when they were initially profiling him, they said that he would not stop, that they thought he would not stop committing crimes until he was dead or in prison. So at a certain point, they hypothesized that he had been jailed for something else. But apparently not.
Didn't it maybe match up though? He like took a job or had kids or something.
Well, he was a former police officer. He was either in the Navy or in the Marines or something. And then he was a police officer and he was fired from the force because he stole a can of dog repellent and something else, maybe a hammer. I did a lot of reading on it, but it all just like kind of washed over me because I was aware at some point I was like, I'm just going to look into all the like horrible California crimes. And obviously he was very prolific and he tortured his victims. He was really sadistic and he, you know, targeted couples and women. And he was kind of striking. I think at one point he had one victim a month. So for Sacramento, you know, everybody was kind of like, as soon as it was dark, everybody would get really freaked out. If women were home alone, they'd be particularly freaked out.
And it was after the Zodiac, right? So it's like... Yeah.
That's what I'm not sure about.
Well, if you said it started in the 70s.
I think it started in 78. Yeah.
Zodiac was in the late 60s. But just, it does feel like, it's like the Manson murders.
Was it
murders
a copycat,
where like,
do you think?
Everybody, like, I don't know, because.
Or like at least inspired by, maybe not a direct copycat, but like.
That's a good question.
It's like, how are there so many serial killers that are in Northern California? It just feels
Northern
like.
Northern and Southern. And there's that feel, like the thing about the Manson murders that everybody talks about is like after the Manson murders, everybody was just like so paranoid and freaked out for like years afterwards, because it's like, even if nothing happens, everybody's like, close, you know, lock all your doors at night and like. If you're alone in an area, right. You know.
So I just looked it up, by the way. And so it was from 76 to 86. And he killed 12 people and raped at least 45 and burglarized more than 120 homes. I mean, it's so terrible.
Yeah, so he's known as the East Area Rapist, the Diamond Knot Killer, and the Original Night Stalker, which is why some people refer to him as Eurons, which is like East Area Rapist / Original Night Stalker.
Right, those are like the message boards on Reddit or Eurons.
Whoa.
But, you know, I saw some people online being like, oh, we shouldn't give these serial killers like nicknames. It glamorizes them too much. But then I heard somebody else tell me that apparently giving them nicknames helped people get caught because it sticks in people's minds if there's a nickname. And there was something about that, like when you give it just gives it like a narrative that people can understand.
The Grim Sleeper was one of the ones that I got really interested in. And the LA Weekly, the LA Weekly before it was the Vichy LA Weekly. They did a lot of amazing coverage about the Grim Sleeper who was,
I remember that one.
Yeah.
One of the reasons alt weeklies are so important and why what happened to the LA Weekly sucks so bad, is that alt weeklies report on local stories that national papers would never report on. And especially like things like the Grim Sleeper, who was targeting a lot of sex workers, people that didn't have, you know, families to advocate for them or
also in areas of LA where there wasn't a huge police presence and it was really hard to, you know, for families to advocate for, you know, deeper investigations.
Or where there is a police presence and they just don't give a fuck.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
And obviously the fact that the Golden State Killer was a cop, you know, ties into a lot of other things happening now of like, hey, maybe we can all admit that like a lot of sociopathic people become cops because they want
to
kill a lot of people.
The police force. Yeah.
Want a weekly news podcast that keeps you informed but doesn't take itself too seriously? Subscribe to Fake the Nation, an Earwolf podcast hosted by comedian Najin Farzad. Every Thursday, Najin invites her favorite comedians, writers, and policy buffs to dish on the news of the week. You'll learn about the ever-evolving chaos in the White House, the Russia investigation, and hard-to-understand topics like what is going on in Syria? Recent guests include Barentunde Thurston, John Fugelsang, Judy Gold, and John Lovett from Pod Save America. So, find Fake the Nation on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. New episodes drop every Thursday, just in time for your commute home.
This is a crazy... It did feel like this week was sort of like a couple of glimmers of hope, you know, of like this guy maybe getting caught. And then also the Bill Cosby verdict came out. And I think I was surprised. I'm so jaded about things like this, and especially about sexual assault.
If he'll spend any time in jail.
You know, the fact that it happened at all, I'm still just like, wow, you know, maybe things can change, and maybe all the people that are like, nothing will ever change because it's in their interest to feel that nothing will ever change, you know, that just like...
I mean, it is kind of incredible that between the first trial and the second trial that there was just such a huge cultural change and Me Too happened. And then to see, you know, the victims crying in the courtroom after the verdict had been read was pretty
Well, that was, I mean, that New York Magazine cover was really big, obviously, because of just that image of like, oh, here's how many people are being just completely discounted because a famous guy doesn't want to get in trouble for being a sociopath.
It's so weird that now we think about everything about like pre and post Me Too. I guess that's like, you know, the power of a hashtag or a name for some or a name of a movement, something like that. But like the it was so there was such a run up to like till we knew how to like. Organize and talk about a problem like that before Harvey Weinstein, and that was a huge part of it. Yeah,
I think acknowledging it was part of the issue because I feel like a lot of people were in denial. Yeah. You know, definitely, I did not know how bad like things were.
Oh my God, I know.
You know.
Also, I think, I mean, hopefully the next step for this is for states to reconsider the statute of limitations for rapes. I know that I think California is reconsidering that, but obviously with Weinstein and Cosby, that was an issue that kind of made it more difficult to prosecute. Obviously, Andrea Constant was the only person who could bring anything against Cosby, and yet there were so many women who, you know, had gone through this.
Who all had identical stories.
Exactly, exactly.
I mean, not like totally identical, but some of the details of like his method of operating were so similar from story to story.
Which is like a thing you see across all these guys, especially powerful guys who like are in a position where they can just have a protocol and just operate it over and over and over
also,
again.
A lot of them seem to not be able to stop talking about it afterwards. Like what I kept saying about all these like guys coming back after Time's Up, you know, they're like, they don't even understand that you should hide out for a few years so you can construct a believable redemption narrative. They're just like, okay, 6 months have gone by. Everyone's forgotten all the bad shit I did. Here I am again.
Well, so wait, you were tweeting about this. Who do we, so Louis C.K., there was an
article.
There
were like a bunch of comeback articles. There's one about Louis C.K., there's one about
Charlie Rose.
And there's
Rose is going to host a show, apparently, where he's
men
going to talk to men.
Men who have been victimized.
Yeah, you know, men who've been victimized by the Time's Up movement or the
and James
movement.
Franco had like a fluff piece like he's turning 40 really? And like he's really, you know, he's not going out much these days.
He's 40.
Oh, no. Oh,
yeah,
that's so sad.
Oh gee, right. Oh poor
I mean
him.
The like Hollywood Reporter has been doing a lot of irresponsible shit lately, and that they did the one on Louis C.K. Like talking about you, it wasn't even like a reported piece. I don't think it was just like what
would
it take?
Come back like through comedy clubs, and I got really pissed off about that because I got in an argument with my friend about it, where I was like, "He doesn't have to. We don't have to let that happen."
Yeah, apparently also, like, he's been. I've heard from people he's just been at Comedy Cellar like every night, just watching, but not going up. And it feels like
people
like,
I know in New York say they've seen him like lurking around bookstores and movie theaters, and just sort of like testing the waters of like being out in New York.
Do I not get booed out of the like bookstore or whatever? But most people like I wouldn't like boo Louis C.K. out of a bookstore. I'd just be like, go home.
I don't think any of us are saying that if you do things, even if they're criminal, even if, you know, you cross lines and you've proven yourself to be a horrible person, I don't think any of us is saying like that you should just disappear necessarily. But I do think that there's that the amount of time in exile, so to speak, is so short. I mean, the Louis C.K. Allegations had been going on for so long. He had been kind of avoiding talking about them, not totally denying, but just saying, well, that's gossip. Those are rumors.
He denied it, I feel like.
I don't know if he actually, there was that weird thing in, I think, Gawker, where he was kind of like, what do you know?
His power to be like, well, he knew he was doing it.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
And all the women he did it to knew he was doing it, obviously.
But it sounded as though he kind of tried his best to not outwardly deny, but at the same time to kind of gaslight the women.
It was all part of some like sociopathic like kink where it was like, I mean, he clearly got off on like almost getting caught all the time, which is, I think, what happens for a lot of these dudes. It's like they like getting away with it, but also like if nobody notices they're getting away with it, they're like, oh, I should make it like more and more flagrant each time.
I mean, I think in an ideal world, what you would want is for someone to step aside long enough to let other people, maybe even women, rise and to help women, you know, to help women without being this kind of.
That's how
you know.
I feel also about like the John Kricfalusi story that came out, which was such a bummer.
That one was so heartbreaking.
Well, it was the John Kricfalusi who's a pedophile.
But we didn't talk about that on the pod.
Yeah, he's the Ren and Stimpy guy, and there were just all these stories about he dated teenagers and the teenagers.
Just like openly, too. They worked for him, like in the studio. Like they were interns or something, but they were also his girlfriends, which is just.
I mean, that's why a lot of
he wasn't even trying to hide it.
Like, just saying. I mean, it was horrible, and it was another one of the stories you were like, oh, and also like a lot of people knew and were like unknowingly complicit or knowingly complicit because they were just like, well, that's the boss. Like,
right. Well, including the sources for the story, for the BuzzFeed story. They were like, well, I guess this was going on all along. I guess now I see this in a new light.
Some of them, I think, kind of either stepped away from him or tried to distance themselves because they felt so uncomfortable. But yeah, nobody really stepped up. And I think a lot of people took responsibility for not stepping up and saying like at some point
well,
I should have.
And even the girls felt bad about it because they were like, I idolized him and then he like took advantage of me. But like, you know, they were, it's so fucked. It was so bad.
The BuzzFeed story was, we all read it around the same time. We had been thinking about, I think, talking about it on the podcast for a while. It came out March 29th and it was called The Disturbing Secret Behind an Iconic Cartoon.
And just all these stories, I mean, all these dudes, I guess what ultimately it comes down to is like the lengths people are willing to go to like protect some guy that they think is talented versus like all the women that they do fucked up shit to as long as those women are like not famous.
Yeah.
And that's been a criticism of the Me Too movement is like, well, you know, if these women weren't famous white actresses, would anyone care? You know, the way it's getting covered is.
And of course, a lot of them are not famous actresses or famous cartoonists because a lot of them can't really stand to work in an industry with a person who is demonized.
Tandy Newton, who's awesome, like said something about just like, oh, I wasn't really asked to go to Me Too. And like, I've been speaking out about this for like a billion years already. Time's up, not Me Too. Time's up. And she was like, yeah, like I didn't get invited to these meetings, but like, you know, it's because I'm not like hot enough as an actress, which is also crazy because she's on Westworld, but it was film actresses only. So I think there are probably also dudes that are hoping these movements will just sort of like eat themselves, you know, that like it'll devolve into infighting and then just die down. So that won't happen, I don't think. I don't think people are going to get unpissed off about this.
Yeah. I mean, I think what's truly interesting about this is that with Cosby, obviously, that cover photo of the victims and just seeing the sheer number of them was really striking. And then with the Kricfalusi thing, the BuzzFeed story had pictures that he had taken of his girlfriends and they were so young. I mean, like 15 years old.
Yeah, they were children. And like the thing was that nobody was even being like people usually do when people date teenagers were like, oh, you know, she looked much older.
Right.
Like, you would never know. It was like, you see it and you're like, that is a kid. Yeah. And also I think if you were like a cool girl kid who like watched Ren and Stimpy, it's such a bummer. Cause you're like, oh, I was like a 13-year-old on AOL. And like, if any of my heroes had like targeted this, like the AOL conversations, just like, oh, such a bummer. And
I think the other thing that's a bummer about Kricfalusi is just like, I think it's a bummer anytime you see somebody who does something like subversive or weird and you want to believe that you like, you know, like especially something like Ren and Stimpy that like obviously had like a lot of parents groups or something up in arms and a lot of people, you know, like it was deemed, you know, gross or something. And you want to believe that any charge against like somebody's character who would make something weird or subversive or something would not turn out to be true, that like you can be like chill and also make weird, gross stuff sometimes and it's totally okay, or like stuff that feels a little bit pervy but like also not be an actual predator. And I think it's just a bummer when your faith in people to be pervy and challenging and subversive but also not a creep, it's tough.
I'm also like always horrified by just like how easy it is for people to leverage power in those situations, like no matter how niche the interest is, you know.
Right Like like all animation, like of course there's like gonna be like
you know, revival and art movie house theaters, which happened at two different, at Cinefamily in Los Angeles and at the Alamo Draft House, you know, where predators were being protected. And you're like, and people would just be like, wait, but like, it's an art house movie theater. And it's like, yeah, but like, if you get a bunch of people that are really want to work in an art house movie theater and you're the guy in charge, like, of course you could exploit that power, yeah. And it's like on you not to do so.
Yep.
And there's also a thing where it's like, no, but I do think there's something about like alternative workplaces, because I've been thinking about this a lot in terms of like how 2000s Vice kind of normalized a lot of stuff that then turned into the alt-right, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just of like, oh, if you were offended, then like you're fucking uncool, you know? And just like all this like, oh, we're breaking rules at work, like we're smoking weed inside and like getting drunk during the day, and then how it like normalizes kind of like, oh, let's just break other rules that like are in place for a reason,
right?
Like sexual misconduct codes.
Well, yeah. Also with, I think with CineFamily, maybe most notably, there was also this thing of like everybody's working because they love it and people aren't necessarily being paid fairly. And also they're being worked so hard that they're staying, you know, they were like staying very, very late. You know, it was kind of like, well, the perks were that you could do whatever you wanted and you had this very, very casual atmosphere, but you were also like really trying to prove yourself. And so it created a lot of opportunities for someone who didn't have the best interests of their employees at heart to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I mean, everybody I know who worked there has talked about how it was like a really culty atmosphere and mm-hmm. how there was a lot of like fear of going against, you know, the lying that was happening about how fucked up it was. And they just went through a million people too, you know, where it's like I don't know. But it's interesting how it was like that was right before the Harvey Weinstein story came out.
Yeah.
And everybody I knew was very involved in it because I know just a million people that have worked there or done things there.
Well, aren't you popular?
No, it's just like if you're, you know, everyone in the indie film community had like a relationship to this place in Los Angeles. And then it was so, you know, kind of.
Well, it is the only place like that in LA, too. Like there's so many rep theaters and more art house theaters in New York. But that was like really a nexus for that in Los Angeles.
Right.
It was the only place you could really get besides New Beverly, which is also run by a perf. So.
Right. So there were also people when that got shut down being like, well, like the theater shouldn't get shut down. Like this is like we're losing a valuable resource, which is like, well, we can have new theaters run by people that like won't exploit that power and, you know, sexually harass employees.
Yeah,
and
when you can't let go of the legacy when it's gone that far in a bad direction.
I think also there's a thing where it's like when you're a young girl and you're getting into an industry and you like desperately want to believe that people are believing in you because of like your talent and not because they want to hire you because you're like a young girl, you know?
You will overlook a lot of behavior out of wishful
thinking.
You don't
know any better. Also,
I think out of wishful thinking too. I mean, I think that really hoping that whatever you suspect, whatever you feel in your gut is going on is not the case.
That was what was such a bummer about the Crick Felicity story, too, is that these were young girls who wanted to be animators and who, you know, one of them left the industry because she felt so, you know, disturbed by what happened to her. And the other one is an animator who's super talented. But just that, like, you know, they were like, if you're a nerdy girl and some guy comes to you and is like, hey, you're really cool. And like, your animation is really awesome, you know, and it's like some older guy you idolize. It's just, it's like, you know, when you're on the other side of it, you're like, oh, of course, that's a fucked up power dynamic. Yeah. But like, if you're a young person,
you're really precocious and you want to think of yourself as an adult also. Yeah. And you just don't. Yeah.
But you're like, adult men take me seriously. And then you're like, I hope that's what's happening.
Right.
Fun night call.
Hey,
not the lightest, but necessary.
Yeah, I think it's stuff we talk about a lot off air, but I'm glad that we got to it.
For everybody that like works in culture and is thinking about all this stuff a lot, it's also really draining and exhausting to think about and deal with. And I think editors need to keep that in mind when they're assigning stories to people, that they're not always assigning traumatic event stories to people who already have the burden of thinking about that stuff a lot.
Hey, and if you are assigning traumatic event stories or research pieces that are going to be emotionally draining, pay people.
Pay them fair.
Everybody scoop up everyone from UpRocks who got let go because they're all super, super talented. And you can easily find the thread on Twitter, but some really great people lost their job last week. So you should hire them.
We're in the middle, I feel, of another wave of media apocalypse, which I don't know.
We'll keep talking about that on this show.
To be continued.
Yeah, there'll be more of that. Well, thanks for listening to this week's Night Call. Please subscribe to us if you haven't on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review and a rating. We really appreciate it. You can give us a Night Call at 1240-46-NIGHT or an email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. We haven't read any recently, but we are going to very much make up for that next week. And you can follow us on our socials, Night Call Pod on Twitter, Night Call Podcast on Instagram, and Night Call Podcast on Facebook. Any social you desire, we are there finessing our socials. Finessing our socials.
I liked it. Also, thank you so much to our sponsors this week, Lisa, Pro Flowers, and Fake the Nation.
And that's it for this week.
Bye. See you next week. Keep watching the skies.